This is the KPTZ Compass Special Bonus Edition. Today, as we near the end of Breast Cancer Awareness Month, we talk with Jasmine Falk Dickerson, a certified holistic cancer coach. She tells KPTZ's Phil Andrus that cancer treatment works best if we combine traditional Western medicine with a focus on body, mind, spirit, and emotions. And she came to this conclusion after her own fight with breast cancer. And now we go inside the compass.
What we're going to talk about today is cancer.
Yes.
And I will tell you, yesterday I learned that two of my friends were diagnosed with cancer. And one, a fresh diagnosis, I don't think she knew. I got an email about her yesterday. And then I went to a store in Port Townsend, and can't be a secret. There was Ruthie with a hat on and no hair.
Wow.
So two in one day.
Yeah.
And my wife also was a chemotherapy nurse. So I have this going by me all the time.
Yep.
But you approach the matter differently. You are a certified holistic cancer coach.
I am.
But this came to you because cancer came to you.
Yes. So just briefly, the journey with cancer was an unbelievably unexpected and quite, it was an awakening journey for sure. I have to tell this part of the story. When I was very, very young, I was about 11 or 12, and I was in school, and I still had no idea what cancer was. I mean, Saudi Arabia is very conservative with emotions in general, and a lot of this stuff sort of stays taboo, and I don't remember hearing about people getting sick or dying from sickness. And I do remember my mom had an Italian medical encyclopedia, and it freaked me out. I hated looking at that thing because every time I opened it, there were pictures of diseases. And I mean, the joke is now that that book really terrified me and started my hypochondria. And around the age of 11 or 12, I heard of a friend that was in school. She was a little older than me, but she had cancer, the big word, and she had a brain tumor. She was 13. And watching her decline was really, really traumatic for me. I had no ways of expressing what I was feeling, putting words to the feelings. It was just a very, very, very challenging and emotional journey. When she passed away, I think many of us were traumatized. I internalized a lot of that trauma. And I remember just basically from that day on being terrified of the word cancer, of the idea of what cancer is. To me, it was a death sentence because that's all I knew. And basically waited for it to strike closer to home. And of course, as the years went by, as the decades went by, everyone was, you know, being affected by it in some shape or form. And I really got into the whole New Age movement with my mom and the Louise Hay thing, and really believing that disease in general is usually a lesson, not in every single case, but in the majority of cases. And so, to make a long story short, my move to the United States was a wonderful move, but it came with a lot of challenges. My life with their father was a wonderful life, but it came with a lot of challenges. There was a lot of emotional trauma. And I didn't mention this last time, and I've gotten permission from the boys to talk about it a little more openly, but their father committed suicide. And so that was a very, very emotionally traumatic experience. And I know that I internalized a lot of, you know, grief and pain for myself, but primarily so that I could just make sure that they were in a good place and they were able to, you know, go on with their lives and the limited understanding as children that they had. And so I would say 90% of women that get breast cancer, which is what I got, is usually induced as a consequence of an emotional trauma. And even the medical world now accepts that. In fact, when I got my diagnosis, the first question my surgeon asked me was, did you experience a traumatic event in the last 5 years? And I said, yes. And so there's a lot of that. And so when it happened, I was not surprised. I was shocked in some ways, but not surprised.
How did you learn of your cancer?
I found the tumor myself. I did my self-exam, and I felt something very unusual, and I had a panic moment, and I talked to my husband, and he's like, well, the only way to find out is to go and check and go to the doctor, and I have a wonderful naturopath that I see, and took all the steps after that.
That was not the end of the panic, I wouldn't imagine.
No, it was not. At that point, I had no idea what that meant. I was completely oblivious because I had lived with blinders. I didn't want to know anything about it because it terrified me so much. And at that point, when I realized, okay, this is now my story, where do I go from here? Do I just surrender to trust what everybody thinks I ought to do? Or is this a death sentence, in fact? Or how much power do I have in this? And so I drowned myself in everything I could get my hands on that explained to me what it was, what was happening, why it was happening, emotionally, physically, mentally, and then, you know, what to do to get, you know, to where I need to.
So over a year ago, I was diagnosed with a kind of skin cancer.
Mm.
Not just the usual, but described to me as being, the word was aggressive.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's the word they use.
That's the word they use. And, you know, I can't use the words on the air that I think of, but it scared me. Mm-hmm. You know what? I mean, I have never felt that kind of, worry.
Yeah.
You know, that kind of worry.
Sure.
And, you know, I dealt with it in a very conventional way. I got, see, top of my head, the big hole in my head now.
Mm-hmm.
That's how I dealt with it. And then everything went away, apparently.
Sure.
How'd you deal with it?
So I did a combo of conventional and alternative therapies. I did have surgery. I had a lumpectomy. And then I had minimal radiation. I did not need chemotherapy. They recommend it just because that's their advice. But in my case, it wasn't either or. It wouldn't have made a difference. And so I decided not to go through chemo. I see a wonderful oncologist who's also a naturopath. So I've gotten on a lot of herbs, a lot of basically rebuilding my immune system because my immune system was totally shot. I had adrenal fatigue. I had an imbalance in hormones, which is what triggered it. Mine was 100% estrogen receptor, which most breast cancers that are estrogen related or hormonally related are usually 70-30, 80-20, even 50-50. Mine was 100% estrogen. And so I knew that estrogen was what I needed to address. It had, you know, gotten to a very, very high level in my body. And so I chose, instead of being on medication, which is tamoxifen is what they use, that's what they usually use for breast cancer. It blocks estrogen, but it only works 5 years. I was only 41 when I was diagnosed, and so I was pretty far from menopausal age. And so I decided to have my ovaries removed and had an oophorectomy instead. And that brought down the estrogen levels down. And so that's the so conventional, but also not very. It was a little radical. My doctors were not too happy about my decision because
I was going to say, where did that idea come from?
I did a lot of research, a lot of research, and it's actually a lot more common. In the early 1900s, that's how they treated every woman's breast cancer successfully, was surgery and then removing the ovaries for women that didn't have intention to have any more kids. And the success rate was very high back in the day, and it's still somewhat practiced in some parts of Europe.
So your oncologist, who's also a naturopath.
I have two. I have one that's a traditional
two
allopathic.
Doctors. I see.
Yeah.
I I thought you had found one that was both. That would be remarkable.
Well, one is both, but the other is. So I'm choosing to do both Western and naturopathic. So, and they work together. They're great. They're great.
They do help you with, and did not make a terrible bother about your decision.
No, they really trusted me. I think they love patients that are very, very committed to find the answers and get in the driver's seat. I think that's a relief for them as well.
And once the panic settled out, your attitude, what did you do? A positive attitude is mighty important, right?
Absolutely.
What did you do to maintain that attitude?
So when I first got the diagnosis, I remember I was sitting in the parking lot to go see my therapist, and I got the phone call that confirmed my
biopsy.
The biopsy, thank you. They confirmed the biopsy, and so I walked into my therapist's office, and of course I cried first thing, and then I said, the first thing I thought was, okay, this is my body. I cannot be angry at my body. And I remember putting my hand on my chest and saying, I love you, thank you, I'm all ears now. What do I need to hear? And I shocked myself, because I thought, before ever hearing a diagnosis, that if I ever heard those words, I would fall apart and bury myself. Like, I literally thought that was the end of the world. And yet when it happened, it's unbelievable how the 30 years that led up to that, all of the study in spiritual growth and evolution and Buddhism and all of that stuff really, really played out, like, so authentically in that moment. And I remember thinking, This is my body. I wrote a letter immediately to my oncologist before ever meeting her saying that I wanted to treat this as a positive thing. I don't want any of my medical team to use words like battle, cancer battle, fighting, killing. I didn't want any words that were negative in context. And so I said, I'd like to talk about healing, restoring, rejuvenating, you know, those were the words. And they were all very respectful. And they said, absolutely, no problem. And so I remained in that mind frame. So the panic really lasted a few seconds.
Really?
Yeah, I will say that the panic is always around the time of waiting for an answer. That's when, like, waiting for a scan, waiting for that's when there's a little bit of that panic. But outside of that, it's education. So I immersed myself in education. I read so many books, heard so many lectures, videos. I devoured everything that was in front of me. And once I understood what cancer was, it wasn't scary anymore. The word cancer, carcinoma, aggressive, all these words, which I used to like freak out if I even heard a whisper of them. And now they're just words, like it's like we give them power.
We're going to talk now about holistic cancer cancer coaching. Mm-hmm. And after your experience and your self-cure, I guess, mm-hmm, we could say,
yeah,
you wanted to help others. Mm-hmm. Who certified you?
An organization called beatcancer.org. It's an organization that is founded by Susan Silberstein, and she lost her husband in the 70s, and there was very little information at the time, and so she sort of dove into figuring out all the different ways, because honestly, cancer is being treated around the world in third world countries way better than most of the modern first world countries. And so she developed this organization that blended all the modalities. And the goal of this organization, which is through which I got certified, is to understand all the different healing modalities and helping patients choose what's right for them. Because I think the scariest part of the journey is feeling overwhelmed at first, terrified, and not knowing where to go, what to do, who to trust, or to trust blindly and not have a say at all. And so the goal is not to dismiss modern medicine and only focus on alternative approaches, but rather viewing it as a holistic thing. And when I say holistic, it's not just holistic medical and alternative modalities, it's holistic as in treating the body holistically. Cancer is an aftermath of something that's gone wrong in the body. It's not something that just appears overnight and decides to house itself and pay rent and be in your home, in your body. It literally is something went wrong. And so what went wrong? Let's find out what went wrong and how we get there.
And why?
Well, it's different for everybody. And the other thing is there's hundreds of types of cancers. I remember when I was undergoing my treatment, my naturopath oncologist, and he practices out of Seattle and comes to Olympia. So he's worked with the cancer centers of, Cancer Centers of America. So he's, you know, he knows what he's doing. And he said that we, unfortunately, the model is it treats all cancer patients the same. But there are cancer patients that need a very, very rigorous and detailed, specific treatment. And then there are those who are a little more casual cancer patients.
And what is his name?
Yeah. Dr. Estchen, Chad Estchen. He's wonderful. He's absolutely wonderful. And so that's one of the things I learned was, okay, so why did cancer happen in this body? And what does this body need to heal? Because we're not trying to cure cancer. We're trying to heal the body. And I think that mind frame can really change
things. And I'd like to hear the distinction.
Yeah. So curing is we are focused on the tumor. Healing is we're focused on the body. So I joke and I make a political comparison all the time. Probably not appropriate, but I will go ahead and say it. So when we have a leader in the country and we are not very proud of the leader, we're not very supportive of the leader is the symbol of the tumor. The country is the whole body. So instead of focusing on getting rid of that, because it's here for a while, so instead of focusing on getting rid of that and only getting rid of that, because that needs to be a focus, we need to focus on everybody else banding together, coming together, and what do we as people need to do to make the adjustments and the changes that we need. And that's kind of the same with the body.
You have my vote.
There you go. Yeah. Okay. So strengthening the cells of the body that are doing the job or trying really hard to do the job instead of the cells of the body that have gone crazy and are not doing their job.
And how do you go about doing that?
So I believe in surgery. I think in cases of tumor that can be easily removed, it's a good way. A lot of people in the alternative modality school of thought don't think that that's even necessary. I think sometimes it's possible not to go that route. For the most part, I think once a tumor has been proven to be there and it's big enough, I think removing it is a good idea. The radiation is really depending on, you know, what type of cancer and how far it's spread, if it has, or if it's, you know, at risk of spreading. Chemotherapy is an excellent modality for certain types of cancers and for the patient that really believes in it. For patients that don't think it's going to serve them, they are encouraged to explore that. They shouldn't be scared into it. And for patients that really believe in it, it works wonders. Outside of that, I think we need to work on relaxing, calming ourselves, breathing, meditating, appreciating the small things in life, infusing our lives with joy, bringing the stress level down, recognizing what our triggers are emotionally, physically, certainly a healthy diet, exercise, moving your body, really being in tune with all the gifts that we are innately given.
So you have worked with clients. You currently
yes.
are not
mm-hmm.
doing that, I think you told
I'm
me.
I'm not doing it very actively, although mm-hmm. I do have a couple of clients right now, and yeah.
I'm wondering what you would do with and for a client of yours who smoked.
So smoking is a big one. It's definitely an addiction. The biggest encouragement is to have them really look at all the ways in which they can successfully quit smoking if they're still actively smoking. If they have smoked, then there are, I mean, I'm not a doctor, so I wouldn't tell them what to do. What I would do in the coaching session would be to provide them with all the information to either meet the right person to work on a specific thing. So smoking is one, diet is another, exercise, stress management. Those are all very, very strong things that affect us. And so my job would be to tell them what is available to them, and then they can choose which one of these feels comfortable. Because some people don't want to give up their Oreos or their Cheetos. And so instead of scaring them into giving up their junk food, you encourage them to introduce other things, and then slowly. It's really, the mind is so much more powerful than the body. And so if we start changing our mind frame as far as how we are viewing ourselves emotionally first, then all the other stuff that's physical comes second. The journey really begins in the heart and in the mind. And then after that, you can comfortably disconnect from your addictions, from your compulsions, and all those things. But until you address what's going on internally, what's triggered your need to have that pull, it's almost impossible.
You have been a coach then for maybe a couple of years.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh.
And have you lost a client?
No.
Okay. I say that because my wife, as I said, is
sure.
a chemotherapy nurse. And every year at the end of the year, they get together and have a kind of service, or I think they probably tip a glass of water or something and
sure.
think about the people that they don't have anymore.
Absolutely. And it is part of the journey. There's a big part of the training that we are trained to allow people to choose that route as well. If they no longer want to fight, for lack of a better word, to be here, then they need to be given permission to go. But one thing I will say is, through the journey of coaching cancer patients, I found my bigger calling, and that is not exclusively for cancer patients and cancer coaching. My calling, even greater than that, is preventing. You know, in the first place, what do we do to not reach that point? Reawakening our life purpose and reigniting our passion for life is really where I'm currently invested in putting my energy. And so it's not just for people that have been diagnosed, but anyone that feels somewhat at a lull or a stale point in their lives.
I'm thinking of the stressors to which you attribute your cancer, however, and they were part of your life, but not necessarily under your control.
Absolutely.
And
oh, yeah.
That can be the case.
Oh, absolutely. There's no way that we don't have an awareness that something's off, or that we are unfulfilled or unhappy or scared or anxious. We have an awareness of that. Sometimes we can't do anything about it in the moment. But if we have an awareness, that's enough for us to shift the way we view our desperation. A lot of us view it as a doomsday thing, or this is it. I'm not going anywhere from here. And so my motto is turning trauma into triumph. I mean, there's no way that we would live without trauma. We are human. We are meant to experience hardships. Otherwise, how boring would life be? And so trauma is part of the experience, but how do we handle the trauma?
So with some of your clients, you must have had at least minimal interaction with their doctors.
No, not at all. My role is not to interfere with the treatment at all. My role is to provide emotional and mental support for the patient that is freshly diagnosed, has been diagnosed, or is preventing a diagnosis, and just sort of offering them the buffet of opportunities, experiences, modalities, all of that.
Strategies, maybe.
Strategies, yeah, mm-hmm. Absolutely.
What training did you get to be a coach? Who trained you, and what was the program?
So the organization is called the BeatCancer.org organization. Mm-hmm. It was all online. There's videos online, and so you go through the videos, and you have some one-on-one email interactions, phone calls, with some of the trainers and the head trainer, Susan Silberstein. And then you get a certification, and you become listed on their registry.
And if people listening, someone listening, wanted to talk to you?
Sure.
Would you talk to?
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. So how do people get in touch with you? A listener, how would a listener get in touch with you?
Yeah, so email is great. You can email me at falkdickerson@gmail.com. That's F as in Frank, A-U-L-K, D as in dog, I-C-K-E-R, S as in Sam, O-N as in Nancy, @gmail.com. And I have to say that because people have thought it was Salk, Dicker, Finn, or, you know, so the letters are always hard to, so it is, it's Falk Dickerson.
This week's KPTZ Compass was produced by Phil Andrus and David Kurland. The Compass airs Mondays at noon and 5 p.m. with a repeat Saturdays at noon, exclusively here on KPTZ 91.9 FM in Port Townsend.